Hello and welcome to Unabashed Book Snobbery, the podcast where we gush about George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire and analyze its abject adaptation, Game of Thrones.
This is where being a book snob is a good thing.
Why do critics give this show a pass?
My name is Kylie, and here with me are Julia.
Hi!
Caroline.
Hi, everyone.
And Matt.
Hey.
The four of us, yep, there's four of us, write for thephantamentals.com for fundamentally sound fandom analysis. And part of that fundamentally sound fandom analysis involves the biggest fandom on the internet right now, Game of Thrones. And here we are, in the middle of season 7,
Is it bigger than the Bernie Bros?
You know, let's not go into politics right now.
I don't think Bernie Bros have much to do with politics.
I don't think Bernie Bros really exist. I think that's just a nice straw man. But that's not the point. The point is, we just watched, almost a week ago, Game of Thrones, Season 7, Episode 4, The Spoils of War. And because I was being really annoying and traveling and taking care of a newborn, we are a couple days late on this podcast, but just as dramatically satisfied as ever.
The question is, did you get her into that Martell onesie?
Okay, so I did. And then there was something that I like to call a poopsplosion. And I've never seen this much poop go anywhere in my life. So the Martell onesie then went back into the wash, and it just was not worth it. But she stayed in her boss lady onesie for a pretty long time, so I've good hopes about that.
Okay.
Yeah. Alright, as we do, we're going to start off this with a very fast recap of the episode for all the heart-stopping action, in case you missed it. Courtesy of Shiro Shinobi. This week on Game of Thrones! Well, folks, it sure was a humdinger of an episode, and the whole internet is ablaze about the blaze. But before we get into that, you may have forgotten what else happened, which was not so much. I suppose there was another hotly anticipated Stark family reunion as Arya Todd made her way inside Winterhell, but not before being stopped by two guards for no reason whatsoever so we could burn 5 minutes of screen time. Sansa was quite happy to see her sister again, but when Bran the Robot spilled the beans on Arya being all murdery, her enthusiasm faded. Can't she have a single normal sibling? Batfinger just watched season 1 and decided to give Bran the Valyrian steel dagger for reasons, which Bran promptly re-gifted to Arya. And then she dueled Lady Brienne with it. Wait, what is happening here? Oh, Mira left. Oh, down in Cheryl's Landing, Tycho Nestorus compliments Cheryl. Over at Dragonstone, Johnny shows deadpan the mountains of dragonglass he's mining, and though I suspect it looks impressive, someone forgot to light the set. Dang it! He also shows her cave drawings of the White Walkers, and since she's watched season 5, she's very convinced, though Johnny still needs to kneel.
Meanwhile, shippers Davos and Missandei do all they can to finish the work Melisandre started by bringing ice and fire together. There's also the arrival of Theon, who asks Deadpan to rescue his sister from Euron. But she's got bigger fish to fry, literally! You see, word reached her about Tyrion's terrible plan resulting in Highgarden sacking, so she wants to go roast Sharrow's Landing to the ground. But she is talked into a much more reasonable course of action by Jonny, and instead sicks her entire Dothraki horde on Larys' troops heading back from Highgarden, while she burns everyone to the ground atop Drogon's back. Much better optics! She also seems to be burning the entire food supply she needed, but no time to worry about those logistics when Bronn injures Drogon using the scorpion! As Deadpan tries to pull the large arrow out of her sunion, Larry spots an opening and races towards her, while Tyrion stands on a hill and calls him an idiot. Wait, how did he even get there? Don't dwell on that, because finally, just as Larry almost reaches her, Drogon turns and blasts fire into his face. Bronn barely saves him at the buzzer by pushing him into a puddle, but things will sure get awkward when he comes up for air. And that's what you missed on The Spoils of War.
Hooray! Awesome. I mean, that recap hit like every single point in the episode because
happened. Did I forget something? I forgot the Winterhell stuff. I glossed over a little bit.
Did you? I mean,
it's not important.
The amount of like time burning that happened, like that's the real fire that was on this episode. It was the burning of the time, not the burning of the loot train.
That's deep.
The loot train. I can't get over that. That's okay. Well, we have a lot of ground to cover. A lot of people were calling this the best episode of the season.
Yeah,
so just before we dive in. Yeah. Before we dive in, I just thought, like, did you guys feel that way?
Well, no. It was 10 minutes shorter. That was nice.
No, this episode was, like, especially badly written.
Yeah.
The dialogue, the exposition was just what you would expect from, like, a 6-year-old writing his first story. It was so awkwardly clunky. And,
D&D really, like, fucked up in that episode.
I mean, we can talk about, like, the warping of time and space and everything. There was an entire section in the middle where I swear it was playing on slow-mo.
Yeah.
And one character standing there monologuing about how great the protagonist is.
I'm pretty sure when I started to lose my mind was when Arya was talking to those two guards for like an eternity.
Oh my god. I have feelings about this. I have a lot of feelings about this. So
it was another season one rehash.
Right. So they keep doing this thing this season, especially where they copy-paste earlier scenes, and they do this in other seasons as well, where they copy-paste scenes that made sense in the past that don't make sense now. And it made sense in the past because she was trying to get into the Red Keep. She wasn't just trying to get into King's Landing. She was trying to get into the place that only the lords and ladies and the king and queen go. And she looked like a rag picker, so they wouldn't let her in. That made sense. This doesn't. I think their explanation to Sansa, the guards' explanation...
There was a long scene in the episode before about how everyone's coming to Winterfell now.
Yeah.
Right, like, isn't this where they go for protection?
Yeah, and the guards' explanation to Sansa was like, oh, she was, like, just some winter town girl. Like, yeah, bitch, let her in. It's fucking cold.
Yeah, and Jess made a good point, too, that this is an example of the magically disappearing patriarchy, because no one would look at Arya and... That's the point. No one would look at Arya and think she's dangerous. So how did they know that she was, like... Yeah. Bad news bears.
I wrote something similar in my low light, I think, about this, that it's like the patriarchy warps around Arya, and she totally doesn't concentrate around
Sansa.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what, the little baby began crying, like, in the middle of the scene, so I had to, you know, get up and do the walk around the room stuff with her, and I remember doing this about 5 times, and I'd come back and hit play, and it would still be this scene. I was like, how is this actually happening? This is terrible. Do we want to just, like, start in Winterhell and talk about everything going on?
Yeah, I think, like, the first scene there was that weird-ass scene with Robot Brand and Batfinger where you're just like, what?
What the fuck was that?
They're bringing back the death. Like, Brian Cogman rewatched season one, I get. Like, we're back to that.
Was the Cogman? This wasn't the Cogman episode.
No, it wasn't, but...
No, but he's in the writer's room. But but why?
I know. And like, it's all, like, significant, apparently, because Sansa was like, he wouldn't have given you that dagger for no reason. So obviously this is going to have some kind of huge and dramatically satisfying payoff, right?
I think we all know what the payoff's gonna be, but...
Yeah, I think Matt was mentioning it before, right, Matt? What's gonna happen with the dagger?
Yeah, like on the last episode, something, like, huge is gonna happen, and, well, I don't want to spoil it, but, yeah, it's...
No, you can spoil it. I think we're all...
You know, for a fact...
Littlefinger's gonna die. Yay! Oh, who cares?
Is Arya gonna kill him with the dagger?
Yeah.
What?
Oh, my God.
I'm how so shocked.
Dramatic, satisfying, to be honest.
But it's like poetry. It rhymes. Why?
And they never even, like... bother to like say that was Joffrey who ordered the attack. Like, that should have happened like 3 seasons ago.
Yeah. I mean, at this, like even in A Song of Ice and Fire, at this point, it's such a minor thing. It doesn't really matter. Like, by the time they made that reveal, it was like, who cares? But
yeah. Are they even gonna get to the bottom of it? Like,
see, I sort of thought in the show, it was sort of implied that Littlefinger did it. Because we have no indication that Joffrey did it, or anyone else did, and the only person tied to the dagger is Littlefinger.
I just think out of all the plot threads...
How does he have it? Like, why does he have the dagger? Because,
he took it off of Ned, I guess. Because Ned had it, right?
Ned's, like, being led up to the sept, and he just lifts the dagger off it? Like,
well, I'm sure his weapons were removed long before then. But, like, I don't know. I guess...
It doesn't make
sense. Well, no,
they're
making a big deal out of the fact that a foot pad had a Valyrian steel. Like, I don't, like, why are they bringing up this mystery? How can it possibly be important anyway?
Is it just like Arya's gonna end up slaying White Walkers with it? Is that.
Well, if I were in the writer's room, a lot of this wouldn't be happening, but if I were the one saying, like, okay, someone's making me put this Valyrian steel dagger in, the next logical step would be because Arya's going to encounter a White Walker and need it. But I don't actually know if that's going to happen, because I don't think it's going to happen this season, and I don't think they're planning enough for next season for that to happen.
There's a chance they also just concocted this whole thing so that Bran could say Chaos is a ladder back in
it. It's a reference. Like,
it rhymes.
The reference. He watched it. Somehow he saw season 3 again.
You're so smart, hypothetical viewer, because you understand the reference.
Oh my god, but like, how many past... Yeah, like, this is the whole season so far. There's just been, like, callbacks, like, look at this fan service. Remember when Chaos was a ladder? Yeah, I do, and it sucked then. Like,
yeah, remember when you had
that
to
was,
see
that
everything?
Was kind of the moment where the sucking really started, if I tell the truth.
Yeah, because
I guess Talisa was the first moment, but...
Yeah, but that's the one that also had Roz's death over top of it, right? Mm. So.
Yeah, Chaos was a ladder had Roz's death.
All right, second robot Bran scene. He can't show any emotions towards Meera.
Poor Meera.
I literally forgot existed.
Yeah.
Poor downtrodden Meera. She just got sidelined in this whole thing so bad. Like, she was just like, she was the replacement Hodor and nobody loves her. And I love you, Meera. I do.
At least she mentioned that Jojen died. Like, that was nice, but not
and
good
Hodor.
Enough.
And
someone remembered.
And Hodor. Yes.
Yeah.
And
you know,
summer.
I actually
she
do want to give props.
Too.
No, like, I do want to give props because I actually, to the writers, I don't think they were doing this for the past 2 seasons, like, mentioning shit that happened before and then showing how that would, like, inform characterization. So, I want to be like, wow, good on you! But then at the same time, it's
the
like,
the rest of the episode? Yeah.
Yeah, and then also, why is she fucking off? Like, isn't Winterhell where all the lords are meeting? What's Halland up to?
I don't know, he's a mysterious, like,
I mean, she's...
Her dad exists, like, in canon, but we don't know where Colin Reed is.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, isn't he dead? Because he was the High Sparrow, right? So he's,
right.
Good point. Touche.
Conspiracy theory.
God.
She's going home, but... to rule. That's what's happening.
No, but, like, I know that nobody in the universe but me remembers the third season of Deep Space Nine, but this is, he's totally like Vedic Boreal when Vedic Boreal has half his brain replaced with, like, a robot brain. Totally how he was asking.
Yeah, and, like, last episode we talked about our issue with this is that this wasn't, like, a gradual thing that happened, or it's not even, like, we come back after he's off screen and this is what's going on. It's just, like, last season he was emoting and this season he's not, and we don't know
why. I mean,
like,
as a concept, I can see how it could work. Like, the whole thing that he has, like, so much life experience now because he has, like, this, like, you know, memory of all the three-eyed ravens or whatever that he can't, like, really relate to his own experience in particular. So he's disconnected from everything. Like, that can work as a concept, but... Like, the execution is just not there. He's just acting like a robot. Like, that's why we call him Robot Bran.
Yeah, when Max von Sydow was playing, this role, right? Because, see, he would have had the exact same powers. I can't really remember. Did he not emote like this, too?
Oh, he definitely emoted. He was, like, super emote-y.
He was, like, sobbing when he was watching.
Like, earning that Emmy nom. But, like, Jess suggested, I think, that, like, the idea is that, like, he was able to integrate his identity into that, like, whole experience thing because of the thousands of years thing. So maybe that's why.
I have a more important question. Why are we not calling him Bran the Bot? Why are we calling him Bran the Robot?
Bran the Bot, okay.
Bran the Bot!
Accepted. Okay, it's canon. Okay.
Mm, yeah.
Good. Is there more to say about the stupid Arya arrives and they won't let her in scene?
I mean, we can just get to the crypt scene of awkward. Which is literally our wrote down in the notes. No, it was like several people have said it, Jess included, I think, that just like, this is like a crossover of two shows that have completely different tones, and these like characters don't know what to do with each other now that they're supposed to be in the same scene.
Yeah. It's very like Avengers-like in that way.
Yeah. People standing in a circle, yeah.
I think Jess also said this in her recap. She did a really good job. She said this in her recap that they sounded sort of like two like office workers meeting at like a Christmas party that hadn't seen each other for a while. And it was like, so, how haven't seen you since the last year. How you doing? You know? It was so awkward and it was so void of emotion. I don't understand. I don't get it.
I feel like most fans of Arya and Sansa in the books, too, this is, like, probably the most hotly anticipated Stark reunion, unless you're, like, super, super on the, like, Arya-Jon team more. Not shipping, not, I'm just talking, like, what you're most champing at the bit to see. And, like, this is the Stark reunion I'm dying to see, just because of the way they parallel each other. And the fact that you've got these just shells of characters kind of, like, weirding around each other. It's like Sophie Turner and Maisie Williams being like, who are we playing again?
And apparently, they were having, like, so much fun, like, during the scene, but it's not translated to the scene. It's
I don't know, like, Arya had this, like, shitting grin the whole time that she didn't take off for the whole episode.
Yeah, it was really weird. I saw the caption of some article that said that they had to shoot it multiple times because they couldn't get it right, and I think it might be because of what Matt's is Matt saying, that they were, like, laughing and shit. It's like, get your fucking shit together, you're adults.
Yeah, that's kind of a problem. They're actors, this is what they're supposed to do. I mean, like, I've seen it before where people are dating in real life and they have no on-screen chemistry whatsoever, but, like, this is a different level. I don't know what was happening.
It was just bad. It was just sad. It was poor writing. Mm-hmm. That I mean, that again, we come back to the same problem as we always do with everything. It's just poorly written.
I mean, do these are these reunions landing with people? There's like reunion after reunion, and just like
Arya didn't even hug her back.
No one is hugging Sansa. It's like she's that starved. Okay, someone needs to really hug her.
And not Littlefinger.
Finger,
I was going to say Littlefinger would
not
hug her.
Not Littlefinger. Okay.
I mean,
I don't know. Is there anyone else she could be reunited with that would hug her? Maybe Tyrion. There you go.
Oh my god! No, don't even. No, don't.
He,
like,
was,
seriously,
so, he
don't.
Was so good to her and so wonderful, didn't you know?
And he appreciated her intelligence so much.
He didn't rape her.
We're getting so
so like points, like
all the points.
He's amazing. I love him. I mean, I just can't stand it. It's.
I mean, he is the best.
Oh my god, we are getting so fucking wanky right now. Like, they weren't even really talking about much of consequence, just like, hey.
No one was talking of consequence at any point. There was no consequence to anything in this episode, as far as I can tell.
I did like the way Sophie Turner delivered the line, like, Bran's also back, because it was with that, like, weight to it. But then we just get the, like, fucking weird scene of Arya and Bran interacting, and Bran just being like, oh, you are murdery.
Here you go, attacker.
It's not a joke, right? She really does kill people, right? I mean, it's not just a joke.
Yeah, and, like, maybe, I'm curious to know what you guys thought. I read Sansa's expression in that scene, as well as the scene where she's watching Brienne versus Arya, as concern.
Yeah.
Concern. I mean, like, during the live blog, I thought, like, when she was watching Arya, like, interacting with Brienne, like, I read it as jealousy, which, like, when you have 2 seconds to think about it, makes no sense. But something about Sophie Turner's performance made me think that, like it's like the same look she was giving when she was watching Jon.
It's kind of interesting because I saw both scenes as sort of humored slash proud. That, like, when Bran did the whole, like, you really have a kill list, Sophie Turner sort of did this, like, weird kind of smiley kind of thing. And I read it as she was like, oh, that's cute, my sister has a kill list. And then, like, sort of in an almost proud way. And same thing when she was watching her. So I don't know what she was trying to convey, but apparently it didn't work.
I think I was projecting what I felt like Sansa should have been feeling.
Well, this Sansa isn't, like, exactly free of, like, kill lists herself, you know? Like,
oh, I know. No. So, I mean, I don't really know what the Sansa is. That's why we had the faces of Sansa Stark.
She wished she had killed Joffrey. So,
yeah.
You know,
was oh that God.
Brittany?
Oh, my I forgot God. That detail. I forgot that oh detail. Thanks a lot, Matt.
So, hey, no, the name of this podcast is Unabashed Book Snobbery. Just to give you a little context of why we're, like, screaming. Mm-hmm. In the books, when Joffrey dies, which was not due to Sansa's own hand, she was an active participant anyway. She was a drug mule, but that she didn't know that. She, like, runs away, and she's kind of, like, laughing, crying. She's a little bit traumatized. She's a little bit like, okay, I'm making my escape. But mm-hmm. she couldn't bring herself to be happy about it and to really revel in the way that he died and the image of him clawing at her
like
throat.
She tells
like,
herself off for being so weak.
Yeah, and she's like mad at herself mm-hmm. that she can't revel in it. And meanwhile, in the show, they're like having her now say, I wish I'd killed Joffrey.
Which, no. Like, that's.
It's
don't worry, I corrected it with Ramsay. I killed Ramsay.
But it's like when she told Theon, I wish I had tortured you myself. Like, that was it was totally unnecessary in the show for her to say that. And it's just, like, a big old middle finger to the book fans. Like, you wish you had Sansa.
I don't think they realize, like, they don't understand book Sansa, like, not even a little bit.
No, and that's why I wrote that.
They realize what they're doing is antithetical to their, like, they think that they're just, like, making her less passive or something. I don't know what they think.
And I'll link the why Sansa really kneeled piece, but they've never known what to do with her. They have fucking no idea what this character is.
Yeah.
Speaking of characters that have no idea who they are, let's talk about that weird fight.
I have a logistical question about that.
Yes.
So Arya was using Needle, which is an actual sharp-edged sword that's live mm-hmm. steel, and Brienne was using what looked like a dull sword, like a practice sword. That's not a fair fight, and that's fucking dangerous. That's not a good idea. Why were they doing that?
But what was the point of the scene? Like, what function did it serve to anyone? Like, what function did it serve on any level? Like, Doyless, Watsonian... What was going on?
It was fan service. Like, just that. There's no...
And Brienne's big claim to fame now is that she defeated the Hound?
Yes. Because it's the Hound. He makes chicken jokes. To be as generous as possible,
mm-hmm.
if we could read Sansa's expression as either jealousy or pride
or concern,
maybe that scene... benefited her character. I can't even convince myself of this. Like, no.
First of all, where did Arya learn to fight like that? That
she stick hitting.
Yeah, I mean, clearly stick hitting in the house of the asshole.
Okay.
All that stick hitting finally paid off.
So I have a question about this, like all of these Arya scenes in particular. So,
yeah.
You know, I sort of get where they're going with Bran and him like being totally emotionless because they think you know now he's a three-eyed whatever. And he's going to act this way. And I just don't see why Arya's acting so weird now. Because
Maisie Williams lost complete track of her character.
Right, it's like, I don't see what made her now, like, why is she now totally unable to socialize?
What is with that grin of her, that like, constant grin of hers? It's, like, unsettling.
If we're generous, it's probably trauma, but, like, it's probably not. Okay. Because, you know, D&D.
So. Yeah. But do they think she's, like, a sneaky assassin, so she has to sneak around with a little smirk and sneaky assassin people? Like, I don't know.
We're supposed to be concerned for her, because she's, like, clearly, like, you know, like, a psychopath at this point.
I'm not concerned for her. I think she's doing a great job.
I have a kill list. Isn't that sweet?
Isn't this just a smirk of empowerment? Like, maybe just reading too much into this.
No, I'm quite sure that we're supposed to be concerned about Arya.
I don't think that we're supposed to be concerned about it. No, because a kill list in the Game of Thrones universe is fine. Why is that bad?
She had the code open, so we are supposed to be, like, actively rooting for her.
Yeah.
Yeah, because she's killing all the people we want to kill.
I think the best I can say, Julia, is that I wouldn't hold my breath waiting for the narrative to condemn this.
Yeah.
Not condemn it, but just...
Or explore it. Or acknowledge it.
Yeah. One of those words.
Alright, we are getting long over some scenes that really don't merit this. Speaking of scenes that don't merit any attention, is it worth talking about the Iron Bank scene?
Okay, this is what I wrote in the notes. I suspect that Lena Headey is contracted to be in every episode this season, and they just pulled this one out of their asses.
She walked on the map, okay? It's like every episode she has to walk on the map.
Well, they paid a lot of money for that map.
I was, like, in a kind of, like, timeless, sleepless zone for a while, and I can't remember if she actually said the line, "Do you like my map?" or if that was from one of the, like, recaps I read. But it's in my head now that the entire scene was just her walking onto the map and asking Tycho.
The entire scene is like Tycho going, like, "Oh, you're the best, Cheryl. You're so good at making this, like, repayment in one giant sum." And it was all like, "I hope nothing happens to the gold that's going to be delivered to the city, thereby paying off your debt."
The golden company.
Fuck them.
Why?
Yeah, what the fuck? Are they gonna come in? And at this point, is there gonna be like
a little bit of a... Well, so remember when the Storm Crows were with Stannis?
Oh, yeah. I'm just waiting for there to be like some, you know, extra named John Connington, and they'll be like, "What a fun Easter egg for book readers." And there will be, you know, 50,000 articles on Vanity Fair about it.
Like the Grave Digger?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
That was ridiculous.
Because did you get it? He dug a grave. Oh, my God. Alright, so that takes us down to Dragonstone, which Julia wants to rename the Abandoned Isle of Sexual Chemistry.
Well, we have to give it some kind of name, because it's clearly not Dragonstone, since nobody lives there.
Oh my God.
I mean, where are all the small folks with their dragon seed? They're kind of important.
It's pretty, right? I mean, the scenery, it's pretty enough, at least.
Okay, on that sexual chemistry point... Are you guys feeling this?
No, no, nobody's feeling it. It's ridiculous. It's the most informed of informed attributes.
Everyone's making excuses just because it's John and Danny. It's like the same thing that made them like not like Cheryl and Larry, and they're doing it for John and Danny. They're creating excuses for the last scene of the season.
Yeah, you know what this 100% reminds me of? Their relationship?
What?
Padme and Anakin. They're in pretty places together. They must be in love.
I mean, I was a small one when I saw the whole Padme and Anakin in episode two, right? Two? Am I crazy?
Yes, two.
Yeah. And I fell for it, but I was also like 10 or something. And...
Oh god, I'm old.
Just watch the Plinkett review of it, Caroline. He did
supporting fascism. This is like so bad that I posted the article that I saw about Kit Harington saying like, "Oh, John didn't expect to find this beautiful woman there, this young beautiful woman," and I totally missed that the first time that they met because there was absolutely no sexual chemistry between them, but they're supposed to be, and I'm like. Looking at cave paintings isn't sexy. Stop it.
It was pretty sexy when Arya and Daemon did it.
Yeah, that was pulled from a Winds of Winter sample chapter, Arya 2, which you should read and enjoy actual sexual tension in caves.
I mean, like, there's only so much sexual tension you have when you're looking for your cousin who might be dead, but, like, you know.
Julia, we can't talk about this.
I want to talk about it, though.
But, no, I just don't understand... What they think is, like, okay, we have Davos and Missandei talking about how they're kind of into each other, but, like, what's supposed to be happening between them that's making us think this?
I know John is all conflicted because he's into her, but he also doesn't want to bend the knee, and it's really deep.
And I still don't get why he doesn't want to bend the knee.
Because the plot demands it.
But how does the plot demand it?
Because if he came in Dragonstone and bent the knee immediately, then there would be no reason for them not to go to King's Landing and no reason for them not to fight the Night King.
I don't understand why
he
pictures...
has to mine the dragonglass first, though. They can move that. They have to, like, have the sex and stuff. That can take time.
Let's talk about the cave drawings on the wall by the Children of the Forest, showing them teaming up with humans to fight White Walkers.
I'm not sure how that timeline works, but... any kind of Children of the Forest-related timelines on this show make my head hurt, so let's just ignore
it. Like, they did it, and then they ran down to Dragonstone to carve it, whatever. But, like, what I don't understand is why this was supposed to be a convincing argument to Dany, who has never seen them before. So she's looking at literal doodles. They look fucking horrible. And he's like, see, there's a greater threat out there. And it's like, oh, well, okay.
But the spiral is so significant because the spiral occurred before, and therefore it innately has significance for having occurred before.
Good God.
Didn't you know?
Why is everything so bad on this show? Also, there's a honeypot right now that John is actually the one who drew them.
That's actually good.
Yeah, I actually believe that.
I like it.
The Children of the Forest.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot more...
I'm not sure
if
the Children of the Forest even, like, having been on Dragonstone make any sense, but...
Right, like, how the hell...
Because there's, like, especially in light of that whole, like, mysterious reason why the Valyrians, like, never invaded Westeros and things like that.
Well, Honey Potters keep on honeypotting, because that's much more enjoyable than what we get. Oh, Missandei and Deadpan talk about how, like, Missandei was, you know, sexually sated.
Yeah.
By Grey Worm. And that was nice.
She's, like, really hoping that he's not dead.
Yeah.
Like, how is he not dead?
Well, she was half hoping that he wasn't dead and half, like, bragging about her sex. It was a weird tonal scene.
Yeah, scenes on Game of Thrones? No way.
It was, like, funny, I guess.
I don't know. Were we supposed to be like, oh, I remember the cuddling? It's like, I don't understand what the joke is. It was actually a touching scene. Like, what are we supposed to be getting out of this? And then she goes and
No, but the whole thing was all like, no, they're talking about sex, and then John is there, and they exchange a look.
Oh my God.
With, like, gossip giggles.
And then Davos, like, says something to him later, too.
Oh, he's like, because John says she has a good heart, and Davos is like, I see you looking at her good heart. Oh.
Because he's looking at her boobs?
Her boobs that are covered in, like, 5 layers of battle dress? Okay.
Yeah.
This fucking show! Okay. So, she gets a pissy fit because she learns about the Tyrion's plan being shit. And then she actually tells Tyrion off. So, that's good, right?
But she's also having a temper tantrum when she's doing it and, like, making a clearly impulsive decision. So...
Well, I wonder how, if this is going to have any ramifications for Tyrion, because basically what she did was suggest that he was sabotaging her. And she said, well, maybe you don't really want your family to get attacked. And I don't know if that would fit in with, I was honeypotting a few episodes that maybe Tyrion wanted Casterly Rock because he wanted it for himself, not that he wanted it for Dany.
Right.
But there's nothing else in the show to indicate that. And
I mean,
that's
to give them way more credit than they deserve, like... She's kind of getting a little paranoid, like her dad.
Right, like I was going to say, I think that was supposed to be showing her as being irrational.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he doesn't want Jaime to die. Like, he wanted him to...
Because he and Jaime parted on the best of terms, so why would he want Jaime to die?
Yeah, so he probably, like, has some, like, residual feelings for, like, his family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And remember the Taisha drop? Remember that?
Of course I do. Yeah.
I don't want to talk about that, dude.
Well, I don't know if it's that they were trying to show that she was being irrational or paranoid because his plan, she was yelling at him for his plan sucking, and it did.
It did suck. It did legitimately suck. But then her reaction was still over and beyond. She was accusing him of sabotage, which, you know, he's Tyrion. He's perfect. He would never sabotage. And she then went with the horrible plan of burning King's Landing, even though they're starving it out right now. So,
but then
they lost all their allies, remember?
Right, she didn't because she got talked off that cliff by Jon.
She didn't attack King's Landing, but King's Landing isn't under siege, is my point.
Oh, right, because whatever, I don't care. Yeah, I'm still saying, I think like it's still showing her being like,
oh, I agree. I mean, like, we've said it like for several episodes now, like, she's a good leader whenever she listens to Tyrion.
And in this case, John, I guess, because his suggestion was don't do that thing, and then she rides off to go burn the supplies.
Yeah, I didn't get that either. She was like, oh, I'm not listening to you and your little plans.
Enough with the clever plans.
Trailer line.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not listening to your clever plans anymore. You, random person who's sort of my prisoner, what do you think I should do?
He gives her tinglies in her pee hole, though, Caroline.
Hey, Theon showed up. Does that, like...
Oh, right! I forgot about that!
John, like, was nice to him-ish by not killing him because he saved Sansa that one time.
Yeah.
So, that was a payoff, right?
Sure. I'm sure they planned it all in advance so John wouldn't kill him when they met in this scene.
there's not going to be a Yara rescue mission, right? Like,
no, no.
No, it'll rhyme with the Yara rescue mission in season 4.
Oh. Yeah, it'll be a reversal. That would be great. I'd actually love that to happen, and I know it's not going to, because that's actually too clever for them.
Wait, and there was the scene where Missandei suddenly didn't know about the name.
Oh, bastard name. I mean, like, do they think that the audience has forgotten that John is a bastard and they have to be reminded of the naming convention?
Oh, yeah, and, like, so Missandei, of all people, would know this. Yeah.
She knows literally everything, like the translation of the princess thing.
Right.
Yeah.
No, she would have fucking read up on Westeros, especially just the idea of, oh, hey, you're a Targaryen. What does that mean? Oh, houses and names are important? Let's find out more about this. Like, 100% she would know. And then that also ended with her, like, randomly standing for deadpan and talking about what a great ruler she is. Again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and was it Davos that was like, she freed you, but you still work for her, though. Was that Davos that did that? I didn't get that. What was that supposed to be? Like,
it was to set up Missandei's next line where she goes on to continue to flay deadpan. like, it was the dumbest point ever.
It really was.
It was very, like, because there's nothing that's happened that's shown us, really, deadpan being a good leader, so they just have to tell us about it, I guess.
It reminds me of the people who make the argument like, oh, you don't like the capitalist system, and yet you still have a job. Interesting. Like, that's what it reminds me of. Like, I'm very smart. Okay. I don't know. Like Julia said this before, everything's an informed attribute on this fucking show, and we have to just have people standing and saying, this person's a good leader, or else we don't know she's a good leader. Because it's not in evidence.
Yeah.
All right. All right, let's get on with it. Let's get to loot train attack, which is actually...
That's better than the other name I've heard it called.
Yeah, everyone's been calling it the Field of Fire, but the official name used by the showrunners was loot train attack.
Wow. It was pretty, but other than that, I was cold.
Yeah, I think the Field of Fire was a little more intense.
Yeah.
Just saying.
A little bit more death in that one.
Anyone who follows me on Tumblr knows what was going on when I was watching this, which is that my niece had woken up and had horrible gas for the entirety of the battle. So she was just, and she wasn't like upset or crying, she was just on me and farting as I was watching the battle the whole time.
Does she have a code name? What are we supposed to call her? You know, like my son has a code name.
Oh, yeah. We can, you know what, let's go with Bella as her codename, which is something that was a name my sister had been considering before, so.
Well, I'm just, like, wondering if we're gonna have, like, Bella updates on every single plot point, or...
Well, she was the most dramatically satisfied during this one. She was asleep during the sexual tension scenes, so take that to be what you
know. She's a very insightful baby.
Yeah, really, that's pretty accurate. I think so.
Right? But yeah, just up and farting during the entire battle.
It's appropriate. It's very appropriate.
Yes.
Is it worth talking about the pre-battle shit with, like, Lord Tarly being all, let's whip the people who are struggling?
I mean, I guess he's... Does he die?
I think he did, right?
I don't know.
Didn't Dickon, the 35-year-old who had never fought before, die?
I don't think we saw Dickon die. We saw him in the battle.
Can we talk about Bronn's character arc?
Yes, he still needs a castle, right?
Yeah, well, he wants a castle, and Larry gave him this giant bag of gold, but when the shit hits the fan, he drops the gold, and he doesn't go back for it. He goes to get the scorpion to kill a dragon instead. So I guess that's character development.
Oh my god, was that actually supposed to be, like, something?
Yeah, I think so, because they made a huge deal out of it. There was music. There was a music cue.
But no. Because if he successfully killed a dragon, first of all, he'd be really, really famous. And he could always go back for gold and loot the bodies. If the dragon's dead, then he
could. But that's like thinking it through. I mean that they're like, oh, he refuses the gold because he has character growth.
But he was just bitching about wanting a castle.
Yeah, but the character growth was very fast.
I honestly think he just dropped it and, like, he wanted to run. That's it. Like,
yeah. And then there was that, like, extremely determined Dothraki who was like, no, I'm not gonna let this guy go. There's thousands of other dudes in this battle who I can kill, but no, I'm going after this guy off my horse.
Oh my god. Hey, I have a question for you.
For me?
For everyone.
Okay.
Why was Tyrion there?
How was Tyrion there?
Okay, yeah. Do we want to talk about the logistics real fast?
I do. I mean, this, I always want to talk about logistics.
I mean, this is like one of like the most egregious thing they've ever done, I think, in terms of logistics. Yeah, like Tywin's sprint down to King's Landing from Harrenhal kind of comes pretty close, I think.
No. Last episode was far worse with Larry running around. Mm. Like,
that was a busy two weeks.
No, but like, okay, so like they're in the middle of the continent. Like, how did they get there?
I don't know. It's really egregious, and one of the
like, where did they land?
What with what ships? Didn't all her ships get attacked?
Not all of them.
Okay, so she moved, what, 40,000 Dothraki, 40,000 plus Dothraki screamers on her remaining ships? I mean, how many ships did we start with?
Were they already there?
Well, that's the other question. How did they keep any horses on Dragonstone?
Maybe that's where all the small folk went. The horses ate them.
I mean, here's the thing. I was mentioning this before the podcast. I have a map up in my office of Planetos, such as Westeros and Essos. And a lot of my coworkers are into the show, and I'll bring them in and be like, no, but you don't understand. This is the Rose Road. And I'm, like, showing them where Highgarden is. And they're like, whoa, how did the Dothraki get there? I'm like, man, I don't know. I have the same question.
I think they were supposed to be quite close to King's Landing because, like...
But then why wouldn't an army from King's Landing go do something about this? Or, I don't know. Did they show King's Landing?
Larry's really incompetent and doesn't have any kind of, like, outriders or scouts or anything like that. So,
I thought they're trying to not use the Dothraki because she was a foreign invader or whatever.
I think like she gives no shits anymore or whatever.
Which I feel I endorse that. I endorse using the Dothraki. It's stupid to say we can't use them because we're foreign invaders. Like no matter what you do, you're foreign invaders. So whatever. But I mean, it's just how did they get there? It's hard to get horses places. You can't just poof them there. And it's not just like just ride them there. Like no, they get tired and not cars. So.
Yeah, like,
and isn't it winter?
How did she feed this army on this way? Like,
well, I mean, that's why they're attacking.
No, like, it's ridiculous that Larry didn't even know they were on the continent,
right?
Yeah.
And are they attacking to get the food? Because she burns a bunch of the supplies.
I don't think she did that on purpose. I think she's just really, really dumb and was like, "Ooh, let's burn this." But the gold is already in Cheryl's Landing, right? They said that explicitly. Because I thought, like, while I was watching, I thought that the whole thing was like, oh, now the gold is gone. But if the gold's already in Cheryl's Landing.
I thought that too, but then I heard afterwards people saying that they said the gold was already in Cheryl. But I didn't hear that. So did they say it in the episode?
I think so. I'm not sure.
Okay. Give me 1 second.
More drama. The gold is gone. Because, like, the whole thing with the Cheryl's Landing scene where Tycho was like, as soon as we get the gold, good thing it's coming. Yeah. So, like...
It was very high grandpa, like, nice grandpa you
the
got
gold,
there.
Okay, she says, the gold is on its way. My brother is supervising the transportation itself.
Yes, but didn't Tarly say something about how, it like, they have to cross the Blackwater Rush or whatever? So they're in the Riverlands now? I don't know. Where the fuck are they?
We need to get the last of the wagons over the Blackwater Rush before nightfall. If the head of the line is ambushed, the tail will never be able to reinforce it in time. I don't think the gold's in King's Landing. I don't think that makes sense.
What the fuck is he talking about? The tail reinforcing the... What?
if the head gets attacked, the tail is too far behind.
So all of the soldiers are in the back? There's none in the front? Or in the middle? What? What's going on?
So wait, why does the internet think all the gold's in King's Landing?
I don't know.
I've seen that in multiple places since Sunday.
I guess because Tarly said the last of the wagons over the Blackwater Rush.
The Blackwater Rush, you can cross the Blackwater Rush quite a bit away from here. It's a big river.
But I wonder if maybe they said it in the outside of the episode.
But then what was the point of the whole Cheryl's Landing scene?
Lena Headey's contract, like you said.
Walk on the map. That's it.
Do you like my map? Okay. Again, Tyrion is standing on a hill, narrating the battle for us, or reacting to the battle for us. Why?
Because you can't not include him. He's so important. And this, like, will somehow be his victory, just like the Blackwater was.
Yeah, but why was he there? Wait, I'm trying to use my brain power to come up with a reason.
But okay, so pretend that, like, you're in court defending this show.
Oh, God.
And you have to come up with a reason why they're there.
Okay, he's there because he's one of her closest advisors, and he's going to come to the battle, because after the battle's done, the army has to go somewhere, and they'll have to decide where, depending on how the battle goes. That's my honeypot. He has to be there.
Good job. Good job, Chancellor.
It's the best I got. Can we plead the case? I can plead the case out for something. It'll be easier. But yeah, no, I don't know why he's there. I mean, realistically, real life, he's there because Tyrion's their cash cow, and they put him on screen so that he can be on screen and people can be happy and cheer. So.
Yeah. I think it's also because they're worried that, like, the audience won't know how to react to this because there's two people we like on both sides. So who do we, like, what are we supposed to take away from it? That was my thought, too. Yeah. It's just, like, they think the audience is too dumb to, like, make these conclusions on their own.
But I think it would have almost been better if we could have had that kind of, you know, two groups sort of forming in the fandom. One saying, oh, you know, oh my god, that was so stupid. And then the other one saying, Jaime was trying to save Cheryl and everything he loved. He should have, it's a good thing he tried, you know, like, then there would have been some conversation.
What are you talking about? Like, this is crazy, like, talk.
Like, if they had, I mean, if Tyrion hadn't narrated it and told us it was stupid, then at least the fandom could have, like, because we do have these two characters we both like, Jaime and Dany, so the fandom could have at least split and had a conversation about it. But
I what? Mean,
that, I don't know. That would require the fandom.
People like, conversation. You know, having conversations and thinking about moral ambiguity?
I have high hopes for this fandom. I still believe that they can think things.
Was the Tyrion being there better than the voiceover from last episode?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Oh, an in-person narration.
So this is the second, like, military engagement that's entirely contextualized by him and his, like, his context of it.
I just want to know if he, like, got there via dragon and he hopped off, or if he got there via horse and he hopped off.
Oh, clearly he got there via dragon, obviously. Don't you know? He's a dragon.
I mean, man. I think there's this entire, like, episode, this entire story going on in the background of people, like, stealing and restealing Batfinger's teleporter, because obviously somebody stole it from Batfinger, which is why he's stuck in that same spot in the wall. We discussed that last week. Then, like, Jamie had it, and then somebody stole it from Jamie to transfer to Dothraki, so who will have it next? Maybe, like, Euron needs the teleporter?
So he's
gonna steal it from Deadpool?
Apparently, Jamie is gonna be back in Cheryl's Landing next episode, so...
How is he not dead? He fell into, like, a river puddle, that was shallow 5 seconds earlier with armor on.
I read somewhere that Jaime falling was supposed to mirror Tyrion's falling.
Yeah.
Like, in the chapter.
Yeah, it definitely was. It was shot the exact same way. Again, they're copy-pasting old scenes.
But that one, like, didn't work in any way, so.
No, didn't. But Matt, to answer your question about which one's better, I think him being present is better. Because the voiceover.
Yeah, we didn't have to hear him as much.
Yeah, and the voiceover was so bad. It was so bad.
Yeah, like, the thing about, like, yeah, but, like, how is his charging after Deadpan with a lance any different from what Jon did during the Battle of the Bastards? So, we needed Tyrion there to contextualize that as a bad and foolish thing, because Jonny did the exact same thing, and it was, like, wonderful and heroic and proved he was a great leader. So, we need that context. Yeah. It wasn't, like, you know, it wasn't there for shits and giggles. We actually needed the context.
Yeah. I just got an ask, by the way, all caps. Why didn't Larry's bitch ass just throw the spear?
It was a lance, not a spear.
Yeah. That's why.
Okay, that's the point.
Yeah, you can't really throw it. I mean, I guess you could throw a lance if you were being really creative, but, like, that's not how you joust.
Yeah, it was a one.
Is there any significance to the fact that he was trying to joust, and jousting is a knight thing, and he's lost his hand? Is there any connection?
It means he's totally over his disability.
Was he couching? What hand was he couching the lance in? Was it in the right hand?
His good hand. I'm not sure what. So how was he holding the ring?
It's usually on the right, on the left one, right?
Yeah, like you have your shield in your no, right. Yeah, like you have your shield in your left hand, and you're couching it with your right hand.
Okay. Okay.
I don't know. I don't understand what was going on, to be perfectly honest.
I don't understand yet how he can hold a lance and ride a horse at the same time, like, yeah.
If you're a really good horseback rider, you can ride without reins, because you can direct the horse with your legsies, but the horse...
With your legsies? Probably,
like, yeah. But, like, I don't know if that works so much when you're wearing armor, because that's a lot dependent on, like, you pressing your muscles into the horse at certain places, and I don't know how armor works.
Yeah, that would have to be, like, with a horse that you know really well, right?
Well, and then there's the whole thing, too. Larry was riding on, like, shallow water, and then it was suddenly deep.
Mm, I mean, like you can call that a nitpick, but it's also, like, complete lack of attention to detail. And that matters. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, can we also talk about how Bronn, like, flew across the screen to save him?
Was that Bronn? Did you see him?
Didn't die. Yeah, it was Bronn.
Yeah, that was Bronn.
Yeah,
definitely
Bronn. Maybe that's what, like, the power of his character arc just threw him across the screen. And he got Jaime and saved him from the dragon flame just in the nick of time.
He had to save his best bro, like...
Yes. It's what bros do!
We need a bro trip, like, every season. Like, we need the dick jokes. Mm-hmm. It's...
That, oh, we had a Bronn dick joke.
Yes, of course.
We made fun of poor Dick Hunt's name.
Because it's fun, you know? It's
I'm shocked that they didn't have Dick and Manwitty.
So.
Oh my god, wait, I just thought of something. Is this, was that dick joke the reason that they had Dickon say his name, like, two episodes ago?
Yep.
That was it, right? That was the culmination of why they had him and why they had him say his name.
Yeah.
Did he die? God.
We didn't see him die.
No?
I'm sure he did. But, like, first of all, isn't Dickon, like, a kind of normal name in that universe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It should be.
Yeah, so.
I mean, there's two characters, like, kind of, like, random, like, off-screen characters who have that name.
So, like, that's how fucking immature Bronn is?
Yeah. Maybe it's only a highborn name.
Yeah, like, I just don't understand who's... Are we supposed to think that he's right in the laughing? Like, you know what I'm saying? Or are we supposed to be like, oh, Bronn's so immature?
Well, Dickon isn't nearly as manly as Bronn because this is his first battle, apparently. And he didn't know that people poop when they die because he's so, like, not as manly as Bronn. So, yeah, I think we were supposed to be laughing with Bronn.
Yeah. So I have a question about Drogon. What was the point of Drogon getting hit?
So that Larry had an opportunity to charge at him and Tyrion could say, don't do it, you fucking idiot.
And the scorpion thing had to pay off, which is kind of a chicken and the egg scenario, I think, but whatever.
Well, why was the scorpion there? Like,
How did they get that? I mean, I guess they maybe expected that Deadpan would come, like, to Casterly Castle or whatever.
Well,
it's not Casterly Rock, I'm not gonna call it that.
I was wondering if the use of the giant ass crossbow and it not being particularly effective was in order to seed the fact that that's not going to work for Charles, because Drogon, like, had his moment of drama where he was like, oh my god, mom! But then he kind of, like, straightened it out and fixed himself. And I feel like unless they get him, like, they would have to, you know, get him in the eye for it. Yeah.
You mean Dornish did it with Meraxes?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then he should have, like, fallen from the Drogon.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she just, like, should have not stuck. Like, the movement he made, like, he went back, like, a lot.
Yeah, she should have been, like, weightless, you know, like...
Yeah, yeah, and she wasn't even wearing, like, any armor, so it's...
She doesn't seem to have any kind of, like, saddle or anything like that on him?
Nope.
Not that we can see.
Yeah, like, she's got the spikes up her badge again.
That's how she stayed on.
Ah. It's like that episode of South Park.
Like, they were so worried about her getting hit with an arrow, they didn't even give her a fucking helmet.
Mm-hmm. I know, right? I'm like, she can wear armor. There's boob armor in this universe. We can give her boob armor. Come on, guys. Get your shit together.
My favorite thing in the world. The only thing I like even better leather, than boob armor even, is, you know what?
Even just chainmail, you know?
Yes, my nail.
Guys, this episode was just a ball of nothing, and we've done an admirable job trying to talk about it for as long as
we've talked about it for as long as the episode is.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. However, let's talk about the dramatic satisfaction that we're going to see in next week's episode.
Hooray!
Next week's episode is called Eastwatch.
What? By the sea?
Oh, that makes sense, yeah.
How does it make sense?
Okay. Oh, we're gonna do things in the north?
Alright, so if you guys are spoiler phobic, whoops. But this is what's gonna happen next week.
Okay.
Jon receives a raven from Winterfell telling him about the arrival of Bran and Arya.
Okay. That should take about 20
Daenerys,
minutes.
Mm-hmm. When Daenerys returns from the battle against the Lannisters, Jon pets one of her dragons.
Ooh, deep and significant.
It's gonna be Drogon, I think.
No, it's gotta be one of the other ones.
It's gonna be the one that he's gonna ride.
Right. It'll be Rhaegal.
Yeah, that would make sense to me.
Never mind. Continue.
Davos smuggles Tyrion into King's Landing, where he has a secret meeting with Jaime, arranged by Bronn, What? In the meantime, Davos searches and finds Gendry in King's Landing.
What? Stop.
He convinces him to accompany them, and finally Davos, Tyrion, and Gendry. He convinces him to accompany them, and finally Davos, Tyrion, and Gendry leave by boat towards Dragonstone.
Don't put poor Gendry on a boat again. He's gonna have like PTSD from that. That poor boy.
That poor 30-year-old boy.
Okay.
Oh God.
Is that it?
Oh God. No. God. Don't make me read this. Okay. Qyburn examines Cersei and finds she is pregnant. She tells Jaime about it.
We have to watch a pap smear? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess now they can make a, what was it, make a dynasty for someone other than themselves, right?
Remember when that line happened?
In Winterfell, Littlefinger tries to manipulate the Stark sisters into a confrontation.
I'm shocked. So shocked about that.
Oh my God. Jorah, cured of his grayscale, arrives at Dragonstone.
Yes, he does.
Sam, Gilly, and Little Sam leave Old Town towards Winterfell.
Okay. So, like, I read that Gilly is gonna, like, find like, an annulment of Rhaegar's marriage, and she's gonna mispronounce Rhaegar as Rhaegar, and that's how Sam is gonna, like, know that Jon's gonna is his son.
Oh my God.
What? How does that make any sense?
Happen. I mean, it makes more sense than anything else.
So, like, Sam just gets a brainwave? An R plus L equals D brainwave?
After realizing they have to provide proof of the danger coming from the north, Jon, Davos, Jorah, and Gendry leave by boat towards Eastwatch to capture a white.
What?
So Jon's gonna, like, get the teleporter, right?
Yes. Yes, yeah. Yes. Dany stole the teleporter from Larry, right?
Yeah.
She's gonna give it to Jon.
Yeah.
And Jon's gonna use the teleporter to get to Eastwatch.
I mean, it'd be a heck of a lot faster if Dany just hopped on her dragon and went north and, like, took a look around and then came back.
Hmm.
Alright, well, that's it. That's next week's episode.
I'm kind of terrified of the R plus L stuff. It's gonna be so weird.
Next episode is the fifth one. So we only got we only have three more, and what has happened in this season so far?
Well, these are the episodes that are, like 2 hours long.
I mean, they keep just, like, evening and unevening the playing field. Like, I don't even know what they're doing at this point. They're just dragging out these conflicts.
It still feels very wheel-spinny to me.
Mm-hmm.
It feels very contrived. Like, you know, again, like we said in the very first episode, we can't have Dany take King's Landing episode one, even though she's perfectly capable of doing it in a reasonable manner. So we're going to wheel-spin through all these really bad plans and shenaniganry. And that's how we end up here. Like, I don't, it's like not worthy. It's not good television. It's just not.
No, it's not. And yet we will still be covering it.
The great, all right, like, paradox of life.
All right, we're going to wrap this up. So thank you so much, everyone, for listening to us. Please visit thefandamentals.com for all our writing about Game of Thrones. This episode was just even more nothing than I realized.
No, yeah, see, like I feel like we've talked about nothing for an hour. Yeah.
Yeah, we've been trying to tease out something for an hour.
We're trying really hard. Definitely a special thank you to Matt for coming on here. You are our token guy of this
season. Hooray!
It's my pleasure, to be honest.
Yay. You gotta get your boyfriend to watch the show again, Kylie. We can have him on.
Yeah. Well, we'll hopefully have you back on, too. Because that would be nice. Yes. And we do like, you know, not just being the crazy women on the internet that yell about things.
Yeah, of course.
We could be the crazy mixed-gender people who yell about things.
Yeah. Hey, if you guys like this podcast, you should tell someone about it.
Yes.
That's a really good way to make friends, I think.
Yeah.
Is to tell them that you listen to us. You can also leave us a rating or review through the iTunes store or your podcast app. Probably most of them have one. Something like that. You can also get Unabashed Book Snobbery swag from our Fandamentals store at thefandamentals.com. If you scroll to the bottom, you see a link to our store. Julia and I both co-host another podcast that talks about general fandom geeky things, like just not focused on Game of Thrones, although we do bring it up a lot. That is called The Fundamentalist. So you should check that one out too. And yep. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's all I got. I'm just so full of dramatic satisfaction that my brain's...
I'm very dramatically satisfied.
I just like, we're getting to the episodes that are like an hour and a half long.
Oh my god.
Don't start with me. Okay. Yep. That's all. Thank you, everyone, and we will talk to you next time.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Then we came to season 6 where we were shown flaccid, warty dicks, but still the writers failed to fix the demeaning way they script their chicks. The show is still a bro-fest, and it somehow endorses incest, but we can't get away. It's mentioned on TV every day. Season 7 thus far, the praise is downright bizarre, since the scripts can't clear the low bar of knowing where characters are. Still it gets filleted, viewers on a hook that's baited, since the show sucks, Game of Thrones sucks, Game of Thrones.